They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities. And though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now, you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
Matthew, I think we're starting to enter a whole new era for the Legion.
Once more unto the breach, my friends. It's a whole new day. It's a new day, but is it a good day?
We'll find out what happens when Shooter is gone.
Action Comics number 385, The Fallen Star Boy, published February 1970. Written by E. Nelson Bridwell, with art by Wynn Mortimer and Jack Abel. Synopsis: Starboy's past comes back to haunt him, and it may mean the end of his Legion career.
Action Comics 385.
Yep.
I don't have a lot to say on.
Well, I have one thing that I think is very interesting about 385 and 386, but mostly 385.
Okay.
So Action 385, and we are well and truly, everyone who's listening regularly, hello future people, future people, because this is a Legion book, knows that right now Legion is a backup story in Action Comics, with the primary story being Adventures of Superman.
Right, and for whatever reason, the main stories in the Superman book, Superman's an old guy traveling around and trying to figure out how he's going to spend his retirement.
But do you know why?
Because Superman's old and no one cares about old people, so let's make it a central part of the book so people feel something for us old geezers.
He was sent to the future on a mission, and it turns out that he was set up by someone who not only made it so that he aged when he went into the future, but locked him out from returning to the year 1970. And that person, wearing a purple bedsheet, is our well-known Legion baddie bad bad, the Time Trapper.
Oh, okay. So it does make sense to read some of those issues, but my God, I was just like, I don't need this. This is actually a three-issue arc of Old Man Superman.
It is a three-issue arc, and it's not
awful. It's awful.
Oh, don't be that guy. I mean, it's definitely dated. It's super dated. And also, there's a President of the United States reference in here.
Oh,
and
yeah,
it's 1970, so that President of the United States, I think,
is Nixon. Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. 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 That's okay. Superman is still strong. All his friends, though, dead. Dead for a long time.
Superman, we need you to go into the future.
And they,
I need you to help me find a body, Superman.
And they ran out of black ink, so that's why they had to color Superman's hair gray.
Right. That they used all the black ink, darkening out that Nixon thing. So
yeah.
So you can't tell that it's Dick Nixon.
So let's actually get to the Legion tale in this issue. The Fallen Star Boy.
Tales of the Legion of Superheroes featuring Colossal Boy, Saturn Girl, and Star Boy, a trio of early Legionnaires dealing with some actual continuity.
Yeah, this is what I found really surprising, is that someone has set Starboy up and they're going to try and kill him. And the amazing thing is, this story is nothing but a revenge plot from, what, 20 issues ago or something?
Adventure number 342, way back in 66, which I think was probably in the first 10 or 12 issues that we covered. The story where Starboy was drummed out of the Legion because he killed Ken's new whore, who used to be Dream Girl's boyfriend.
Right.
And Dream Girl's boyfriend, Ken's new whore, has a brother.
Oh, no, not the identical twin.
No, they're not identical, because this brother doesn't look anything like Ken's new whore. And also, interestingly, we learn that at this point in the continuity, the planet Naltor, where Ken's and Nora
and
the
Dream Girls come from,
don't have shared familial surnames, because Ken's new whore's brother is named Yark Althu.
Now, maybe it came from a different mother.
Well, at this point in the continuity, Mizanal, Dream Girl, has a sister whose name is, and this changes later, but her name is given as Zola Ak.
Right. I remember that.
So I think that at this point, we're supposed to believe, at least in a Nelson Bridwell written issue, that Neltorian names don't actually carry like that, or they don't have the family names used like that. So
right.
I do like that little bit of continuity. And I like the fact that this is a callback to something that happened 5 years earlier.
Now, who wrote that issue? Who wrote that issue 5 years ago? Was that Bridwell?
Adventure Comics, Volume 1, Number 342, The Legionnaire Who Killed, is written by Edmund Hamilton. Boom. Thank you, Matthew. Pencils by Kurt Swan, inks by Shelley Moldoff. So, yeah, 66 would have still been a Hamilton issue. And you remember Hamilton.
Yeah, I remember Hamilton.
Edmund A. Hamilton wrote about the Legion in the future. See, I
so. Yeah, this issue starts out with space pirates, and then is quickly revealed to be a revenge plot, which I really love the revenge plot twist. And I was like, holy crap, they are really diving back into a time period where Starboy wasn't even part of the Legion of Superheroes and Dream Girl was not part of the Legion of Superheroes. And they both had to be asked to come back, which again was about 12 issues ago or something like that.
It's been a while. And I do like, and this is a very Nelson Bridwell kind of thing to do, I like that focus on the old story. And I like the fact that when we get to the point that Starboy is using his powers, Starboy's powers are described usually as, I make things heavier.
Mm-hmm.
Starboy in this issue is like, oh, you forgot something important about me. I don't make things heavier. I add mass.
Right.
So the gun that you're trying to shoot me with is actually full of molecules squeezed together, and it's heavier because it's massive. And then Nelson goes on to explain through Starboy how mass works with gravity to create weight. And I'm like, it's a flash fact.
Oh, yeah. No, it has definitely got some science behind it, which I think is very, very cool. And I think this solidifies Starboy's powers far into the future, right? I mean, he's basically talking about how he can change something to have the mass of a neutron star or make it light as helium that you might find. And he's really talking about the science part of his power. So I like the fact that they're trying to solidify this with more true science than, I just make things heavier.
At this point, he can't make things lighter.
Right.
That's what Light Last does. And that's always.
That's the only reason why those two are on the team together.
That's right. You need both of them to make one superpower. It's like if Invisible Kid had a counterpart who could not be invisible.
Yeah.
And well, now that you mention it, he has 26 of those.
Yes. So. the other thing that made this interesting was that because Starboy's powers are all about quote unquote weight until he explains it away.
Mm-hmm.
The villain decides that, oh, I'm going to have us battle in a weightless atmosphere in zero G's, and therefore you won't be able to stop me. And it's just like, it's a good thing he explains it because that's not how it works.
And I do like that. And I also like the fact that they're in that zero G environment and he throws them at a wall and Starboy is like, nope, I got a flight ring and I'm trained, baby. And he's just like, whoosh. This is probably the best looking Starboy we've seen to date.
As far as his actual look or his actual power set?
The way that he's drawn, this is definitely a standout Starboy issue, both in terms of what he does and how awesome he is, but also how he looks. Because there's a panel on, I'm going to say, page 9 of the Legion story, which is like page 17 of the overall book,
mm-hmm.
where he's flying away from the wall and he's got this whoosh kind of going on, and he doesn't look like a Superboy knockoff. He looks like a cool, unique purple and gold hero. And I've always liked purple and gold. So, yeah, this is a really strong issue just as a Starboy show off. But you know what else it has?
What?
Has a little bit of action.
It has a little bit of action. Fighty. I mean, it does have a lot of action in here because the team does have to take on these space pirates. They do have to deal with these characters, these villains that are able to counteract their powers, such as anti-telepathy helmets.
Nice. And have we ever seen those before?
I don't think so. It is brought up there like, well, if these guys know all of our plans, they must be reading our minds telepathically. And Saturn Girl's like, no, they don't have anti-telepathy helmets or else I would detect that. And that's not what I'm detecting. And they have some things to take care of Colossal Boy by going through downtown at rush hour. And he's like, oh, I can't step on these people. They look like ants.
You know, and again, it's one of those examples of someone taking those powers and taking them to the logical extreme. The things that would happen if you were really that big, you might step on an overpass if you were Colossal Boy.
Yep. I also think that maybe in my phone book copy, there's a page, they've got two pages flipped around. Because at one point they're getting away and then they're on the ship and they're all contemplating things. And Saturn Girl's like, no, the anti-telepathy helmets would block their powers if they were. And then Star Boy is like, oh, yeah, these are the things that I would see Dream Girl doing. And then actually the page before, he's like, that's it, Dream Girl. So it's actually got things flipped around in my phone book copy of this. So that's a weird misprint because I was reading this going, okay, he suddenly jumped to a conclusion. How does he know? And then the next page, I turned it and I was like, oh, these pages are obviously backwards.
That
is interesting. And I don't know if that's the way it was in the original. I mean, they're numbered 6, 5, and 6.
Right.
But
they're presented backwards.
Yeah, they're presented backwards.
That is
interesting. I think that's just an error on somebody's part. So
yeah, I think it's a reprint error.
And then, of course, at the end, they take out the bad guys, and the guy's like, I'm sorry. And they're like, oh, you're still a space jacker.
Which space pilot.
I don't even want to know anything about that.
Don't do that.
That they're like, hey, you are a bad person from Naltor because you didn't see the future correctly. And he's like,
for
I'm so ashamed.
See the future, you sure screwed up, yark.
And then he's like, I will be shunned by my society forever now.
And the I end. Have a pointy helmet.
The end. Oh, man, those helmets are ugly helmets.
They are.
These
are very
ugly, ugly helmets. They're like, take a bowling ball, cut out a place for your face, and then stick some antennae on the sides and the top, and there is a big, ugly helmet for you. It just looks dumb.
Speaking of helmets,
yes,
the Naltorian science police still wear the old school pointy bobby helmets made out of balloons that I've missed for so many months.
Well, and that's because, you know why that is, right?
Why's that?
It's because the United Federation of Planets, they have a unique style that everybody who's part of the police are all part of. It's kind of like the United Nations, right? The United Nations Task Force all have to have the same uniforms.
The blue helmets,
So the science police have these same helmets. The thing is, because of budgetary concerns, because so much money is going to the Legion and their Legion headquarters and rebuilding everything, the money to get the new uniforms, there's like this, not a bell curve, but there's a log curve of the further you are away from Earth, the longer it takes you to get the funding to buy your new helmets and get outfitted. And so that's why over at Naltor, which is on the far western edge of the galaxy, has the old school stuff and not the new stuff that we see on Earth.
Yeah, Steven just made that up, by the way.
Hey, listen, if you're going to make up stuff about whatever happened to the Superboy planet, I'm going to make up this continuity so it makes sense to people. Right. I've got to be the voice of reason to be there and let people know if you're looking for a reason, this is why.
Right.
And also, what's going on this planet that they're on, these ancient Xanthu ruins, there's some, like, Morlocks and stuff running around on this planet.
You got to have Morlocks. It's Xanthu.
It's scary.
It kind of is. And, you know, you're not the only one making stuff up in this issue just to explain away something that's weird. Because in the letters column, they actually refer to, we talked about this when we talked about Action 381, the hapless hero, the matter eater lad who lives in a bad side of town story. Duplicate Boy used to be called Ord Quelu.
Right. This is where they, is this the origin of that names don't matter, say in front, words backwards, or upside down?
Yeah, this is the point where this one actually is an early version of it where, they called him Quaid Orlu, which is it? And he's like, oh, and the other one, Violet just misspoke.
Right.
So they actually blamed it on an in-character error on the part of the Legionnaire, which I think is pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's very, very, very fascinating.
If you enjoy the show, we would appreciate your support. You can find out more and become a Legion Clubhouse member at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
So I mentioned at the beginning of the show that this episode is kind of big because we begin the non-shooter era of the Legion of Superheroes, which, man, didn't seem to last very long, but it had a huge impact in everything going forward. But shooter's gone now. I mean, this is Bridwell going forward for many, not many issues, but for most of the issues going forward, We're going to get Kerry Bates and E. Nelson Bridwell.
Yep. And this is interesting because it doesn't seem like it, but it has been 3.5 years.
Mm.
Remember when we talked about Shooter joining the Legion? Shooter
yeah, it was like 14-year-old.
Yep. This book is street dated February of 1970, which correct. Means it was on the stands around Thanksgiving of 1969.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Shooter graduated high school in May of 69.
Oh, okay.
So Shooter's
so
out
they
of
should have hired him. They should have hired him full time.
They actually did.
Really?
Sort of.
Really?
Yeah.
That, I find that amazing because of what's his name, who was just like, I got this kid for a song and I'm going to work him like a slave. See?
He was working for them. He was doing more work for them.
Uh-huh.
And then he got a gig over at Marvel literally across the street back in the day as an assistant editor.
Okay.
So by early 1970, Jim Shooter is actually working at Marvel.
Oh,
as
he's working for
editor.
The, he's working for the competition. Somebody recognized his talent and said, hey boy, come over and work for us right out of school. We'll pay you the big bucks. This is going to be the best gig you've ever had.
Yeah, not really, because he's
oh,
not
no.
writing.
Oh no.
He's an assistant editor. And basically for about 3 or 4 years, Jim Shooter went to Marvel and did grunt work. And around 1974, Jim Shooter retired from the comics industry.
Gasp. Now, here's the thing I will say.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people think that when they graduate from a high school or from a college or get a degree in whatever that they've got or a certificate, that they're going to go out and they're going to get the top job. They're going to go walk into a place and say, I am the greatest. You should hire me to redesign your entire video game system, or you should hire me because I'm going to come in and correct all the mistakes that you're making. Mm-hmm. And often a lot of graduates are upset because they are given, I don't want to say mailroom stuff, but they are hired to work as assistants. They are hired to work as assistant to an assistant or whatever it may be. And
an
the problem is,
level gig.
Yeah, and the problem is, it's not the company saying, yeah, right, kid, shut up and do what we say, although sometimes it is that. But oftentimes it's, we want to start you in this position as an assistant editor because we want to show you, you've been on the writing side and you've been phoning things, I mean, not literally phoning things in, but you have been sending stuff to us from, you know, across the country. You've never really been in an office and see how the comic industry really works. Come in and as an assistant, you can see all of these different departments. You can see all the different jobs that an editor does, and you can start to learn the business of comics. So even though it may not have been what Shooter wanted, and I don't know what his desires were at this point, if he came in thoughting he was the hot stuff and was demanding something better and got an assistant job. But from Marvel's point of view, they were thinking not, you know, 3 months ahead, not 6 months ahead. They were probably thinking years ahead of, this is a kid that we can start grooming into our business so that when the time comes, we can move him into like a main editor position or maybe the chief editorial guy at Marvel. But I guess Jim didn't see it that way, right? I mean, he left in 74, you said.
Yeah, in 74, he left. And also, mid-70s, Marvel was a complete mess.
Oh,
they went through
kind of
five,
like the 90s.
Yeah, they went through five editors in chief in the space of about 7 years. But
wow.
A couple of years after he retired, a Legion fan named Duffy Voland, who's actually a big-name Legion fan, tracked him down for an interview, and they were like, hey, Jim Shooter, you wrote some really great stuff. What are you doing now? He's like, I'm managing a chicken shack in Philadelphia. I don't know what type of restaurant it was, but Jim had actually, you know, he was managing a store, and Duffy Voland went and interviewed him, and this interview was printed, and then people are like, hey, I remember Shooter. He was pretty good. For some way or another, he ended up back at DC in 75 and 76 writing Legion again. So down the line, you know, maybe 15, 20, 35, 50 episodes from now, we're going to be talking Shooter again. But here's the best part.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Writing the Legion in about 75. By 76, he went back to Marvel as executive editor under the editor-in-chief, Archie Goodwin.
See?
By 78, Jim Shooter was Marvel's editor-in-chief. He's
so,
27 years old.
So seriously, for those of you that are in positions saying, well, I want to work in comics, and the first job that I want is to write Batman or Superman or Spider-Man.
Or Spider-Super.
And then the company that you're writing for is like, no, you're not going to ever get to write Batman right out of the gate. And they want you to write like a Booster Gold or a, you know, a backup issue to something. It's because they want you to feel how their system operates. They want you to work up through the system. I don't know of anyone except for Brian Michael Bendis, but even Bendis, you know, he went from Marvel to writing Action Comics and Superman over at DC. But if you go back into the archives, Bendis wrote like backup issues stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
Bendis
decades ago.
Comics for years before he even got to the big two.
Yes. So they want you to go and do other things. And if you're good, then eventually you could come up to Batman. So I think that's a lesson that in the comics industry, in the video production industry, really in any industry, don't expect to the day that you graduate from high school or college to walk in and say, I'm here to apply for the executive management job at this McDonald's because I'm totally got ideas to totally change how things are done here, because they'll say, yeah, there's the fryer over there. Get to work. Because it's, you just are not ready for that. And it does take time to build up to that. So have a little patience. I know everybody is like eager to just get out there, but I think if everyone takes a little patience and learns from Jim Shooter that they started you in the assistant editor position so that you could be editor in chief, 10 years later, something like that. Five or 6 years later. Yep. I think that's probably a good plan and something to kind of pay attention to.
Yeah. And until Joe Quesada, Jim was the longest tenured editor in chief in Marvel Comics history.
Action Comics number 386, Zap Goes the Legion, published March 1970. Written by E. Nelson Bridwell with art by Wynn Mortimer and Jack Abel. Synopsis. How does the Legion fight a man who can counter every one of their superpowers?
386, More Adventures of Old Man Superman.
And I'm old. I'm cranky. Where's my Super Muselix?
Okay, don't even joke about Super Muselix, sir. That's not funny. But interesting.
Oh, hit a little too close to home.
Shut up. We talked about Time Trapper last issue, or last first half of this episode.
Right.
We talked about Time Trapper.
Right.
This issue shows me something that I've never seen before.
The Time Trapper's face?
No. Time Trapper normally is a man in a hooded hood.
Right.
Right. This Time Trapper is wearing this cowled assemblage that looks for all the world like Archie Comics Fox around 2017 with big floppy ears.
Yes. It looks
weird. It's already a man in a purple bedsheet. And Superman is not merely old. He's on a planet of old heroes.
And he's on retirement planet.
I used to be Electro Man, and I used to be Green Lantern.
Yeah, that Time Trapper outfit is just disgustingly horrible. Is he supposed to be, I don't know. He's like, I remember Batman. I'm going to model my stuff after him. But yeah, old man planet, just pass.
But backup story, Tales of the Legion
backup
of Superheroes.
Backup story, Tales of the Legion of Superheroes. Oh boy, this is going to be fascinating. This is going to be exciting. This is going to feature criminals again, as we talked about in the previous issue. This is going to feature criminals that longtime readers of this series will recognize. And we also see how the penal system deals with problem criminals or career criminals or these, not psychotic criminals. No, what's the one where it's like you're not a career criminal, but you have a mental thing that compels you to.
Compulsive criminal?
Maybe it's a compulsive criminal, right? Okay. So we see that these characters are put into something called the prism chamber, and these prisms dance around your head and they hypnotize you into removing all of your evil intentions so that you will never have criminal urges again. And the first thing that I thought of when I saw these crystals whizzing around this big brute's face is that, you know, Doc Savage had a way of dealing with the criminal mind, and that was to stick a big knitting needle right up into your nose and swirl it around a little bit.
This is Doc Savage. He had special knitting needles made.
And if people are thinking that I'm being joking and facetious here, I am not. Doc Savage, who was a Golden Age pulp hero, he would take these criminals that he didn't think could be reformed easily through regular jail time, and he would send them to the Doc Savage Institute in upstate New York. And there they would go under, and I'm going to paraphrase here, a medical procedure that cut off the portion of their brain that caused them to do criminal things. And years later, it's basically revealed that Doc Savage was performing lobotomies on criminals so that they would be dull, be calmed down so they wouldn't have those urges or have that criminal intent, essentially lobotomizing people. No, literally lobotomizing people.
Yep.
And that was seen as okay. And when you learn that about Doc Savage, I learned this probably about, because I only started reading Doc Savage in the early 80s. Probably it took me till about freshman in college before I was like, wait a minute. And then some people were starting to write more about Doc Savage. And we realized, oh, no, this is lobotomy. He was not a good person, Doc Savage.
No.
And I kind of have a feeling that if you're going to try to hypnotize people or remove the criminal intent from people.
Right.
Or make them not habitual criminals, that somehow somebody's going to figure out a way to get around that. And it's going to backfire on your butts big time.
And that actually does happen in this issue, because a criminal named Uli Algor put a pin in that.
Lily Algor, huh? That name sounds sounds familiar. Oh, yeah. Uli Algor. That name sounds familiar.
Yeah, she basically.
You may remember her from such episodes as
Action 379.
Just a few issues ago, like less than 10 issues ago.
Yep. And the fascinating part about that is that in this issue, she finds a way, or found a way before she even got into prison, to inoculate herself from all light-based forms of hypnotism.
Right. That's the way her powers work, is that she light doesn't affect her. She's immunized against all light powers. So these prisms are not affecting her. So she sits in the chair. She sees the criminal go in ahead of her. And the guy's like, oh, I'm sorry. I will never commit a crime again. And they're like, okay, good day. Here's $20 and a bus fare. And she's like, oh, all I have to do is act like this guy and, you know, denounce my past criminal activities. And they're just going to let me walk. And sure enough, that's exactly what happens. And as soon as she gets out of prison, she doesn't even go and see a movie. She doesn't even go and check in with her parole officer. Nope. She puts on pink leather, or maybe it's pleather in the future.
No, it's leather.
She puts on a pink pleather outfit.
Vegan leather.
Vegan leather. And she goes and tracks down the three founding members of the Legion of Superheroes. So we've got Cosmic Boy, Lightning Lad, and Saturn Girl, and Night Girl.
The
only way, the only thing is, it feels really weird because it's like, here you've got three of the most important characters in the Legion of Superheroes, and you have Night Girl. But then you have to think, she's totally in love with Cosmic Boy. So at this point, are they having a relationship at this point?
Yes, we are deep in the love story episodes of the Legion. And Night Girl is here solely because of her long-term crush on Cosmic Boy and their developing relationship. The next time we see them is actually during the Mike Grell super naked period of the Legion. So it seems like they like each other more than they do. But yes, Night Girl is here solely because she's dating Cosmic Boy. And Nelson Bridwell remembers a story where that totally happened months and months and months ago, y'all.
Yeah. So Uli.
Uli.
Whose new crime is vandalism.
With her push button belt.
She has the power to counteract or essentially counteract everyone's superpowers.
Yes.
So she gives Saturn Girl these horrific mental horrors.
Yep.
Night Girl flips down an alley and says, I'm going to hide in the dark and become the most powerful person in the universe. And then Uli is like, and blinds her with a big flash of light. Lightning Lad has been drained of his energy or something, and they have to put him in a glass coffin.
His brain has been short circuited or something.
And then Cosmic Boy had every bone in his body broken. And so he's put in a full body cast.
Yep. Repelled by his own magnetic powers. But it's okay. It's the future. He'll be good in a couple of days.
And so they have to go and track down Uli. And in fact, she's like, hey, I'm going to challenge all you Legionnaires. I can take you all down at once. And Brainiac's like, okay, fine. Let's meet. Let's go to the junk planet, which
yep,
I'm guessing
asteroid
is
Talus.
Yes. I'm sure that this one has shown up a million times from here on out.
Sort of. This is its only appearance in the pre-Crisis Legion.
But see what I mean?
During the Volume 4 Legion, the five-year gap Legion, Talus and the wrecked ship specifically, the big tangle of wrecked ships, becomes the Legion of Superheroes headquarters.
So here's an interesting thing that you mentioned this. Now, in the previous special episode where we were talking about Brian Michael Bendis doing the Legion of Superheroes in the Millennium event, if you listeners have tracked down some of the art for that, the main page for this event, the Millennium event, features someone standing in what looks like the wreckage of hundreds of thousands of ships. So I'm wondering if maybe that shot isn't of Tellus and we aren't looking at a 5 year later type Legion, a little bit older, still a little disgruntled, but it wouldn't surprise me if that is the location that we find the Legion on in the future.
That Legion story is about 30 years old, which means that it's perfectly aged for someone like Bendis to have read it, you know, like we did in high school and college, and maybe bring it all back.
So no matter what the Legion brings at her, I mean, Phantom Girl tries to go and take down Uli, and she's just like, nope, sorry, I'm going to deflate you. And Brainiac 5 can't do anything to bring her down. And so Ultra Boy is like, oh, I'm coming to get you. And she's like, doesn't matter. You can only use one power at a time. And that's time enough for me to take you out. And she's ready. And what does Ultra Boy do? Pow!
Clocks her in the face.
You didn't expect that power, did you, woman?
Never, ever bring a knife to a gunfight. But more importantly, preparing for any superpower is problematic when the guy you're fighting is known for not using his powers. Ultra Boy can only use one at a time, and so he's used to making do without being invulnerable, without being super strong, without being super speedy. Clocks her in the face.
I was always taught never to hit a lady, but you're not exactly a lady anyway. Pow! Oh, man, that's a horrible message, right? I mean, that is
Joe's from Rimbor, though. Rimbor is like... Rimbor is like the Las Vegas, the bad side of Las Vegas of the galaxy. Rimbor is like...
I don't know. I was like, okay, this is a great thing, right? He's not using his powers. He's thinking of a different way to do it. But then to just say it again and I'll backhand you again kind of attitude. And I'm just like, holy crap, Ultra Boy. That's really somewhat troubling.
Rimbor is like the South Bronx of the galaxy. Rimbor is like the just outside of Oklahoma City. Rimbor, for those of you in Europe, Rimbor is like the punching you out in Liechtenstein. I don't know if they do that, but I like saying Liechtenstein.
Yeah, it was
pretty shocking.
And it is pretty shocking. No, I mean, you do not expect it.
It works.
And it's not like, I think that there was probably a better way you could have drawn that, but this is like full on, the punch has been finished.
Yeah, he's Uli's crossed. Head. I mean, it is a big right cross and she's going down.
Oh, yeah. Her neck is snapped back and she is off of her feet flying back. And you can tell she's definitely knocked out. And it is just like, oh, my God, that is like some major. I mean, it's a fight. She's a villain. I understand that. It's the times, but smack a lady. OK,
well, it's the future. Remember, all people are equal, including women who have push button belts.
Sure.
You know, even if you look at this in a 60s perspective, the page previous, Joe's fiance got zapped with her zappy kablamicus.
Yes.
So, I mean, this girl kind of earned her punch in the face.
I mean, I'm not saying it's not deserved.
Oh,
I'm
no.
just saying it is super shocking.
And I do like,
I mean, you do see, even today, you do see characters. A Clint Eastwood is probably a good example of what's going on here. With Ultra Boy, especially if you have seen The Gauntlet, especially if you have seen probably The Gauntlet is the best example because he is going to track down essentially a woman who has not skipped out on bail, but she's missing and she has to get to the courthouse in order to testify against these horrible people. And he's not above punching a woman, Clint Eastwood, in some of these movies. And I'm not saying Clint Eastwood is a real person. I'm saying Clint Eastwood as a character in movies.
Or whoever he's playing.
Yeah. Whoever he is not above punching a woman. And it feels like Ultra Boy is personifying that late 60s, early 70s male attitude towards women who had it coming to them.
Well, they do set it up well early in the story with the Legionnaires watching some sort of weird documentary about the 20th century and seeing a 1910 fist fight. And commenting about, oh, boxing was outlawed centuries ago. Oh, this is so terrible. Let's watch intently. It's terribly entertaining. And I'm just like, okay. But what they're watching is an actual boxing match from 1910.
Which I find fascinating as well because they're watching it live from 1910.
The 3D timescope.
Yeah,
baby.
They're not watching, you know, an old film footage. There's some technology that has traveled back into the past so people can go to this 3D timescope show and watch something as it's happening on July 4th, 1910.
Yep. Which is kind of terrifying.
That is super weird. Also, I think, isn't Midway City mentioned in this? Isn't that where one of the, something is going on in Midway City. I could have swore that this is the issue that mentions that. Maybe it was the previous issue. But I know Midway City got a name drop here, and I kept thinking, oh, they're going to the junk planet. It's Detroit in the future. And I was like, oh, no, this is they mentioned right out Midway City, which is interesting because who do we know from Midway City?
Hawkman.
Hawkman, the Thanagarian. And if I'm not mistaken, in the future, now, not the future of this comic book, but the future version of the Legion, has the Ran-Thanagar War ceased by the time the Legion is around, or is that something that's still brewing in the background like it is in every continuity of the DC universe?
I don't recall the Ran-Thanagar War coming up in Legion, except maybe around the time of Infinite Crisis.
Okay.
When they were doing all of the crossovers in 2005. And I think that version of the Legion would have still been Wade Kitson, the V3 Legion. The Earth Prime Legion, for lack of a better explanation.
Sure. Yeah, so I don't know. I just find that fascinating that they would make a reference to another place that is not, you know, Metropolis, which is, right, you know, as we've talked about before, overtaken everything from the East Coast to the Mississippi.
And this issue is actually fascinating because I did not realize this until I started putting two and two together. You did mention that we've seen Uli before, but did you know the story of why and how we've seen Uli before?
It is explained in the issue.
Sort of.
Yeah.
They say that Uli plotted to steal secrets from the Legion and was being freed after several months in jail.
Yes.
But when we previously saw a character in Action 379... Do you remember the girl who pretended to be Shadowlass?
Right. Yes, this is her.
That girl was never named.
Right.
This girl has red hair. That girl was blonde. But 20 years later, in an issue of Who's Who in the Legion, somebody stitched these two stories together. And this is the best part. She's been in jail for 6 months. 6 months before this issue would have been just about that Shadowlass fake appearance, where we find out that Uli actually infiltrated the Legion with Sunburst.
Right, right.
Like three episodes ago in this show. Go back and check it out. You remember me saying Sunburst is very natty. So I love the fact that this story alludes to something that I'm not sure was intended, but it fits into the continuity so perfectly that everybody just decided, okay, we're going to go with that.
Yeah, I seem to, for whatever reason, when I read this issue, I kind of knew which group they were talking about and what issue they were talking about. So
but
maybe
they
this
never
is
explicitly
yeah, they never explicitly
clear,
said so it. And I think that we don't see, occasionally we will see some editor's notes in here like, oh, see previous issue. But I'm thinking that we are starting to approach a time where editor's boxes of see issue Action Comics 346 or whatever it is, needing to start to appear to maybe clear up some of the continuity questions or to let the readers know, hey, we're following continuity, kids. Isn't this great? Shouldn't you be paying attention to? Because I think that that will help solidify what DC is doing with the Legion at this point. So I'm all down for that. Well, that wraps it up for another installment of the Legion Clubhouse. Matthew, what did we learn this week?
We learned that issues of the Legion of Superheroes printed about 700,000 copies, sold about 375,000 copies, and were still only a middle sales book for DC in the 1970s.
A revenge plot is always good.
That's true. And once again, it's time for a leadership contest in the letters page. I'm voting Matter Eater Lad. Tell us your votes at majorspoilers.com.
I'm voting Never Punch a Woman. That wraps it up for this installment of the Legion Clubhouse. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out. If you have questions, podcast at majorspoilers.com. Join us in our Discord server, and you can hang out with other fellow Legion Clubhouse fans, and we can talk all about the Legion and things that are going on. And be on the lookout for our special episode for the new Brian Michael Bendis series coming out soon in September. We will have that for you. If you would like to support this channel and make sure that we continue to release new episodes all the way through September, help us out by heading to patreon.com/majorspoilers. That wraps it up for this time. And until next time, I'm
Old man Superman is dumb boy.
And he was a skater boy. She said, see you later, boy.
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, eat it, Grandpa.
This podcast is copyright 2019 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.